Tuesday, September 13th, 2022. And we have five cases scheduled today. This is the last case we have scheduled for oral argument. My name is Sarah Wheelock, and I'm the presiding judge. I'm serving on a panel today with Judges Diane Bratfold and Jeannie Cochran. And we are here in courtroom 100 of the Minnesota Judicial Center. The oral arguments are recorded by the court, and the audio recordings of these arguments will be available within about 24 hours on the branch's website. With that, Marshall, please call the final case for today.
This is case number A21-1614, Greta Lynn, petitioner, appellant, versus Tracy Jo McConnell, respondent.
And counsel, you're probably familiar with this, but you will have 15 minutes for your argument. We don't have opposing counsel, so we won't have opposing argument or an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. There is a timer on the center podium that you may use, and feel free to move the podium up. There's a little button under there where you can adjust that. And please introduce yourself at the beginning of your argument so that the recording is clear, as well as identifying the party that you represent. Once you have everything set, you can begin.
Thank you. May it please the court, and good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Zachary Marsh. I am here on behalf of Greta Lynn, the appellant and mother in this matter. If acceptable to the court, I'd like to refer to her as mother throughout for clarity. The parties to this action are the parents of one minor child. He's currently 6 years old. The present action commenced, at least the modification of custody action commenced when he was four, and he is now aged approximately those 2 years. At the time of the divorce, the parties were married in 2018. The parties were divorced, and my client was granted sole physical custody of the child. The parties retained joint legal custody per agreement. Mother remained residing in Minneapolis with the child, while father had relocated to North Dakota prior to the dissolution action concluding. There is no denying the parenting relationship between the parents was acrimonious. It was strained. There's been a number of motions that have been entertained by the district court and a number of parenting time expediters, which have been appointed to this matter beginning in April 2019, with the most recent being appointed in May 2020. Now, in early 2021, father moved the court to modify physical custody of the child. There was no request to modify legal custody, and the parties continue to share joint legal custody. Concurrently with that motion, mother moved the district court, to vacate a parenting time expediter's decision that had required the child to be enrolled in full-time child care despite mother's ability to provide care while still working. Father's motion to modify physical custody was based largely on three allegations, which the district court referenced in its findings. The first, that mother locked the child in the bathroom in her home as a timeout location. The second, that mother left the child unattended in a vehicle at some indeterminate time. And the third, that mother had allowed the minor child to view one R-rated movie and potentially be exposed to a part of a second R-rated movie. All of which led to behavioral problems and ultimately the child's dismissal from his child care center. The district court determined Max was endangered, his mental and emotional well-being was endangered. There was no finding that his physical well-being was endangered. And as part of this determination, the district court relied on a parenting time decision, expediter decision, dated December 29th, 2020, which was admitted into evidence over mother's objection. And this was Exhibit 57 in the trial court's record. Mother first contends the district court erred by admitting this parenting time expediter decision. The Minnesota statute 518.1751 subdivision 4A details the confidential nature of parenting time expediter, the process. And while procedural and evidentiary rulings are reviewed for an abuse of discretion, this is a matter of statutory interpretation which should be reviewed de novo. The district court.
So counsel, if you don't mind, I'll just jump right into my question for you. I follow your analysis, and it's well written in your brief, explaining the error the district court made in receiving the written decision of the parenting time expediter. And it's quite clear in the written decision of the district court that that decision carried some weight with the district court cited and quoted in several spots. However, this court, of course, can't grant relief unless we find that that error was prejudicial to the appellant and affected the outcome. And in this case, so the three decisions that you cited, there's other evidence in the record that establishes all three of those things. And I'd say most notably, and I appreciate it, Mother's candor in her own testimony acknowledged that the three, she of course views the acts differently than the district court does, but acknowledged the correctness that those are things that happened to this child. And then it was up to the district court to weigh that in addition to the other evidence of the record and make a determination on endangerment. So I'm struggling to see where we go from this error in the district court accepting the confidential parenting time expediter's decision to granting relief in the appeal. So could you help me with that?
Your Honor, and it is very difficult to determine the amount of weight given to this, and I think that is a part of my client's argument, is that the parenting time expediter was very forceful in her belief that mother was to blame for much of this, and the district court.
But mother admitted that she did these three things.
Mother admitted that.
So I mean, who else would be blame? I mean, that's not the word I would use. I wouldn't use blame, but I mean, mother's accountable for it. And your brief gets to that. I mean, in the second issue, I mean, you get to, well, is this really endangerment? And I appreciate that argument. And if you want the court to move to that argument, we're happy to. I on the first issue, I just don't, because mother admitted the acts and the facts that are also referenced in the parenting time expediter's letter, I don't see where we get prejudicial error.
And my client's position is in the conclusions drawn by the expediter, okay. Not just the acknowledgement that these issues occurred, but the belief by the expediter and ultimately the district court that the occurrence of these issues actually did endanger the child. The expediter was very very strong in her language, and not only the admitted exhibit, but the additional email which the district court did
keep up. So that's
Exhibits
58?
Correct.
Okay. And I had one question for you about Exhibit 58. So I'm sure I can figure it out if I work hard. But, you know, is there a part of the district court's decision where you feel that Exhibit 58 is relied on and, it's significant, we should really study that? Because I was struggling to see that.
It's, again, an accumulation of the information provided by the expediter that my client didn't have the opportunity to cross-examine the expediter on. And again, it's just, it is very difficult to determine the amount of reliance placed on those statements and by that evidence that was admitted or included in the district court's order.
Well, what do you think give me your best shot at this, counsel. I mean, if we're viewing this from your lens, the mother's lens, what is it about Exhibit 58 that prejudiced mother in the light of this, the decision made?
And if you'll bear with me while
mm-hmm. Sure.
I locate the... I think the specific portion of the inclusion there is the determination by the parenting time expediter that mother was not following the court order.
Well, that's what I thought that was your argument reading your brief. I don't understand how that impacts the endangerment determination. I don't even see the district court referencing that. There is reference to the mother's disagreement about, for instance, full-time daycare, which I think is what we're talking about here.
Yes.
I don't see where that doesn't factor into the endangerment analysis. There was mother's motion about changing daycare.
And the district court incorporated that, and you are correct. It is unclear what weight was given, but the district court had incorporated this into its analysis of the endangerment. And certainly I I have little doubt it was a clerical copy and paste error from a temporary order. I believe that is where the language came from. That was reflected in the court's temporary order. That being said, it was included in the court's findings and in the analysis. And so for me to guess what weight that was given by the district court, I'm just not able to do that. This was the factor, but it remains that this, the inclusion, the omission of this evidence and the inclusion of this email, leaves my client in a position of not knowing, of not having that opportunity to have cross-examined a parent time expediter who, by all accounts...
This court can't speculate about prejudice. So we need something more than that, counsel, some articulation of how the admission of this evidence actually prejudiced mother.
And I think we can move on then to the second piece of this, which is the endangerment analysis, which my client also believes the expediter's decision played into as far as the available information.
So if I follow your endangerment analysis, essentially say that the findings of the district court don't rise to endangerment. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. So in that regard, I guess I'd ask you to, there's a tendency in the appellant's brief, and it's understandable given the way this case was presented and reviewed, that to focus on, like as you did in your opening, three acts, you know, that happened. And maybe it was more than one R-rated movie, but that there certainly is, and more than one instance of a timeout in a bathroom. But basically three specific instances or types of behavior that the child allegedly was endangered by. But the district court went beyond that, you know, in the endangerment analysis and said that the child had been endangered in, I'm reading from 18, the addendum in 18, that the child had been endangered in petitioner's care and there has been a change of circumstances, which is one of the required findings, and I think that seems to be accurate. I didn't see a challenge in the appellant's brief to that. The child was expelled from daycare for these behaviors, and it warranted reconsideration of custody, according to the district court. And here's the part that I found persuasive, so I'd like to hear what you think. It is clear that the child's best interests are not being served while in petitioner's primary care, as evidenced by the child's alarming behaviors and expulsion from daycare, exposure to inappropriate adult content, and questionable punishment methods that have affected the child. And from that, then the district court goes on to talk about this, and I appreciate your candor, admitted this dysfunctional co-parenting relationship, that when these behaviors of the child are viewed in the context of the dysfunctional relationship and the court's others' findings about the child's best interests, and the court was left with the conclusion that it was appropriate. There was child endangerment, and that it is in the child's best interest to now be placed with respondent. So help me understand why that analysis isn't sufficient.
Certainly, and I can speak to specifically why the three incidents were included, and that was the district court itself indicated that father's three primary arguments were the exposure to the R-rated movie. And there was, the testimony reflected one R-rated movie, the Halloween movie Child's Play, and that comes into play in just a bit, with the child being in the room at some point of another R-rated shark movie.
That was mother's testimony, that the child was in the room, as though that doesn't matter, but I don't know that the district court agreed with that.
And to the extent it did or did not, it would be a second movie anyway, whether the child viewed it sitting.
The impact of the first movie was pretty significant in that then came up in conversations at daycare, right?
And that is, that I think is certainly a
conversations debate. With the child.
Certainly. Yeah. The discussion, or at least the statements about a knife by the child, occurred 6 weeks later, after the viewing of this movie. There was testimony by the child's therapist that she found it highly unlikely that a child would have retained that information and spewed it out 6 weeks later. That this isn't
so. Maybe the child saw the movie more than once. I mean, what is the inference? For, you know, the district court was in that position of having to make that decision, right? We don't make those factual determinations.
Correct. I think the daycare provider added some additional context to this in that she testified as to the statement that the child made, the concerning behaviors that Max, that the child was exhibiting at school, were then characterized as saying he is little, so he would mention that, and his focus would change to something else. So it's not like a good conversation with an adult. You know, we had a 4-year-old boy at the time, and to draw the conclusion between a viewing of a movie from my client's perspective 6 weeks prior, and a statement about a knife, not stating anything about viewing a scary movie, about watching a film with a knife in it, but simply stating a knife, is a leap. The child's therapist believed it was a leap. The connection is tenuous. And to give context, in the sense that this is a 4-year-old boy, again, making these statements is important. Similar, and I realize I have just a few seconds left here, just the... The issues the child was exhibiting, and again, I'll be very brief, were certainly noted in prior documents. There was an assessment by the University of Minnesota done a number of years prior, which indicated the child had experienced trauma, had experienced anxiety based on this parental conflict, and these behaviors continued, and to indicate that it was mother's actions solely and no connection to father or the parental conflict certainly does a disservice, I think, to the overall dynamics here. And so with that, I apologize for going over time, but thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Counsel.
Any further questions? Okay. Thank you so much, Counsel, and thank you to the Counsel and party for the information provided today during argument as well as the briefing. We will take this case under advisement and issue an opinion in the statutory time period. With that, that ends this morning's calendar. So again, thank you, and we are adjourned.